You're listening to the Sound of Football podcast, a ride on the football fairground.
Let's face it, you know, if only like three men and a store and going to see a game, and, you know, that's something, you know, these people aren't going to go and win the European Cup.
That didn't take long.
three men and a haggis.
33 minutes for the foreign references in there.
It won't be long before one of us is saying "Hoops Mom" or something.
For the benefit of
references
people
to Gordon Jackson,
we are all wearing those hats with the ginger bit stuck out the side of it,
Russ Abbott style.
Yes, welcome everyone. Welcome to another edition of Three Men and a Sporran. Oh no, sorry, no, that was last week, wasn't it? Yes. Yes, Sound of Football time again, everyone. Chris Hope here as ever. I'm very pleased to say, as I always am, that I'm ably assisted by Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello, Terry and Graham.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
Okay, well, just very quickly, some housekeeping, just to sort of say thank you very much indeed for your feedback after last week's show, which was certainly enjoyable for us, and it seems to have struck a chord with some of you, and it seems like you all enjoyed it. Thank you all for your positive feedback, and thanks also to our good friend Seb, who gave us a bit of feedback about what he thought was the problem with Scottish football. I think in a nutshell, he basically said that it required some investment and it needed a sort of root and branch look at bringing young players through and teaching them all the necessary skills and basically scrapping the current setup and starting all over again, which I think is certainly a more valid set of arguments than what we put forward last week. But anyway,
we should have really asked him before we started recording.
We should have invited him on, and that would have saved a whole lot of trouble.
That's some nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, and it would have been a very, very, very short podcast, though, because we would have been over and done with in a minute and a half, basically.
would have let Seb say whatever he had to say, and then would have said, right, well, thank you very much indeed, and see you again next week. But no, we figured that you've paid your money, and you deserve a decent podcast that lasts at least 30 minutes if we can go that far. Anyway, this week we're going to turn our attention to international matches, friendlies, qualifiers, you name it, the whole business of one country playing against another. And as you may know, if you're a keen football fan, you'll know that we're in the midst of an international break, a chance for countries to play each other in friendlies before the qualifiers for the Euros and so on and so forth crack on in the early part of 2011. So we've got lots of friendlies coming up, and we'll deal with those shortly. But first of all, do we need friendlies, especially this time of year? I mean, if you ask any Premier League manager at this time of the year, chances are you'll get a negative reaction from them when asked the question, are you in favour of international friendlies? Because it means that their players perhaps unnecessarily have to play in games where they might risk injury and so on and so forth, or could do with, frankly, having a bit of a rest. So I come to you first, Terry, on this one. International friendlies at this time of the year specifically, or perhaps generally, a good idea? Should there be fewer friendlies, or do you see them as harmless in the overall scheme of things?
I think they're fairly harmless, because usually what happens with international friendlies is the first 45, 50 minutes are played at some sort of moderately brisk pace, and then everyone sort of like settles into a pattern and says, well, let's try not to kick each other too hard, because, you know, we've all got a game on Saturday. So they tend to be quite sedate, and there's the other arguments that they get an opportunity to, you know, to see, you know, other players, emerging players coming into the squad in a sort of consequence free environment, a bit like the 60s. I think the probably in terms of whether they're necessary, I mean, managers do sort of like need a bit of time with their players, but I wonder whether or not training camps in some instances might be a better idea. The whole thing might be better if there was a little bit more energy to them, if they were taken a little bit more seriously. I'm loathe to bring up the whole egg-chasing malarkey for the second week in a row.
Not again.
But we're also having egg-chasing at the moment, egg-chasing internationals. And these are, to all intents and purposes, friendlies. They're test matches, but they're not... I mean, they're not for anything. They're not qualifying games. They're not for, you know, I mean, I imagine that there'll be token trophies dished out, and I imagine the prize money is probably quite substantial for players and for the individual unions as well for winning them. So there is something at stake. But they are, to all intents and purposes, friendlies, and they are fiercely competitive, massively competitive matches. And we don't have anything like that. The closest, I guess, that we might remember would be excuse us for dipping back through time, folks, but the home internationals, which of course are due for a modest revival quite soon, albeit minus England for the first couple of years until they realise that they're actually quite big money spinners and then decide to come in. So I think the idea of friendlies is okay, that they do, in their current form, seem a little pointless. I don't think I'm going to be watching a game. In fact, I think I agreed to go down the pub with someone. I think it was you, wasn't it, Graham?
I think it was me, yes.
Yeah, a pub with no telly as well, it should be
yes, stressed. Indeed. Right. Yeah, that was quite... But I do remember the last time we watched an England game down there. It was the game we lost 1-0 to Northern Ireland, and I nearly got into a fight for laughing at the... at the dire way that England were playing.
I know, and this guy just couldn't handle it, could he? He couldn't believe it. Another Englishman could really be.
It was like he'd never seen England lose before.
Rooney lived near you.
Either that, or he was actually a goldfish dressed up in an England shirt, and he simply couldn't remember the last time England lost, which was he had a poor memory span.
So with all that taken into consideration then, Graham, I mean, Terry mentioned the fact that there is this sort of processionary pattern to friendlies these days where you get, if you're lucky, the first half featuring some kind of meaningful football, and then the second half you get various substitutions made. But there have been some changes recently to kind of combat that, in the sense that there are now fewer substitutions allowable. I mean, I remember years ago you used to pretty much see a completely different team come out, certainly under, was it Sven-Goran Eriksson, or McLaren or whatever was the sort of specialist of that. So, they're there for a reason. They are there to give some of the lesser-known players a chance to run out. Can a training camp sort of substitute that in a purposeful way, do you think?
I think not as far as playing is concerned, obviously, but as far as like players getting together and forming some kind of camaraderie, I'm sure that you know, things like that could probably help. I don't know. I mean, I actually quite like friendlies, really. I mean, they can be a little bit pointless, and they're chucked in. I don't think there is any opportune time during a season to have friendlies, unless you have a season break, and then all the managers will be saying, "Well, look, my players are meant to be resting up now." Blah 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 blah. Big run in January. Blah blah blah. And of course, in certain parts of the world, it's not very easy to put on internationals in the middle of December and January. And of course, in this part of the world, we don't have a winter break, so we don't get to see that anyway.
But the thing is, of course, I mean, like in the summer, it's almost sort of forbidden, isn't it? Really, after a long domestic season, that you can't have any kind of friendly during the summer. It's time for the players to have a rest. So that does leave you sort of with those few openings that are arise.
And I'm sure if you look at the people who are running Man United and Liverpool, they would point at people like Wayne Rooney and Fernando Torres and say, "Well, look, that's what happens when you make people play flat out for a whole season and then ship them off to a summer tournament."
Indeed,
I think it is a two-way street, because international football is important. Like we've discussed this before many a time, and the fact that it does open the doors to the game, and it does provide huge amounts of money for the game, for the backbone of the game, which, you know, if clubs aren't willing to actually put their hand in their pocket or accept any reduction in their revenue, then they've got to expect, you know, the FA are going to have to sort of try and earn their money somewhere, and with England, they've got a massive money spinner through shirt sales and just basically interest in the squad. I mean,
I was just going to say, either of you really. I mean, that leads me on nicely to my next point, which is that one of the many international friendlies that are going on in a couple of nights' time as we speak, or a couple of days' time, is a match between Brazil and Argentina, which is taking place in Doha in Qatar. And as many of you will know, it forms a part of what's being unofficially called, I can't believe for a moment this is official, but it's been unofficially called the World Tour of Brazil, which is rampant commercialism. It's not difficult to find yourself swayed by these arguments that the friendlies are there, to quite a considerable extent, just there to generate money, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, it's a professional game, so you know they have to make money, and they've got something that people want to see. So why not put it on for them? I can understand the clubs. I mean, it's very frustrating, and for club managers, I'm sure, when they see their best players go away and then come back injured. I mean, you know, the sort of brouhaha that's been generated between the Dutch management and Arsene Wenger over the last couple of weeks about the call up of Van Persie up to the Dutch squad is a good case in point. I mean, now, although the last injury that Van Persie had was when he was playing domestically, the previous injury he had was while he was on international duty, and that's got to be very, very frustrating for Arsene Wenger, especially with what has happened as well with Walcott as well getting injured on international duty for England. So you know, yes, you can see why managers get a bit shirty about it, but international football is not going to go away. I mean, you know, all right, a lot of diehard supporters don't really give that much of a monkeys about international football. You know, it's often seen as sort of like you know, not proper football. You know, because there's no tradition there. It's just a lump of random players brought together, and that's exactly how it looks half the time for England. But you know, it is important, and it is very, very, very popular. So you know, clubs, you do need it in some respect.
Clubs also get a degree of reflected glory from having internationals as well. The value of players in the transfer market, of course, is going to be higher if they're a current international as well. And the players themselves, of course, they get a much better deal in terms of, you know, additional sponsorship and endorsements if they're playing for their country as well. So there are benefits all round for doing so. It's just that, yes, in the midst of a long campaign, you think, well, just when you've got your plate spinning, you know, all at the same time, do you really want, you know, half your squad or a good portion or some of the key members of your squad disappearing for a week or so? There's another issue also interesting with the Dutch FA, with the Arjen Robben, of course, whose injury was sustained the last time that he went out with the squad for a European Championship qualifier. And there's a massive, massive dispute between the Dutch FA and Bayern Munich. And it looks like it's actually being resolved in Bayern's favour. There may well be compensation for Bayern for Robin's most recent injury. So, I mean, these things do happen. But again, just to return to the original point, I think that they are in demand. People clearly do want to see them. When England play at home, even in these friendlies, they do sell an awful lot of tickets, despite, you know, being quite poor. So they're having a really bad World Cup, and they still manage to shift a fair number of units. So there's clearly a demand and a desire for them. But I don't think there's much you can do in order to spice them up, unless you were to, I don't know, try and place more emphasis on them. But you know, predominantly, certainly in the European game, and you know, probably to an extent, maybe in South America, but certainly in Europe, there is huge emphasis on club football. That's what the beating heart of it all. The federations do need that money in order to be able to generate the game and to maintain it and stimulate its grassroots. And that is what these games are for. And, and a few days a season, periodically, once every 3 or 4 months, I don't think is really the end of the world. And yet, again, it's not like, you know, they're not being played. I mean, you know, when this is the last one of the year. The next one's going to be what, January, February?
February, so
there's
going to
be a big push for everyone, for their clubs. They'll be back with their clubs, and their players will be back with their clubs, and they'll be able to, you know, make a big, big push right into the meat of the season. So, you know, to that extent, it's kind of there's an element of well, looking for excuses, getting your excuses in early, just in case.
I think you're damn right there, Terry. I think it's just a quick question to say, look, I can blame someone else for our own shortcomings right now.
Yeah, which, it's like the Africa Cup of Nations, isn't it? That is always being blamed by managers who persist in signing African players and yet whinge when every 2 years they go off to an international tournament in the book for years, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you wait till January comes around and David Moyes has to say goodbye to Tim Cahill for a month, and Alex Ferguson has to say goodbye to Jason Clark.
Yeah,
and you'll probably get the same in Germany with Kagawa going off as well, won't you?
Yeah. If Kagawa gets picked for the Japanese side, which I imagine probably at that point he will have done. But yeah, well, I don't know actually. I mean, it would be interesting to see. I look with interest to see how you know managers like Jurgen Klopp sort of respond to that. But certainly you will. Yeah, you're right. There'll be no shortage of whinging, even though it's, you know, it's the Asian champions. It's the Asian championship. It's your confederation's championship. It's hugely prestigious. Why wouldn't you go? And why wouldn't you want to go? And again, in a year's time, the same deal with the Africa Cup of Nations. You know, it's all very well signing African players, you know, but they are that tournament's been in the book for decades. So, what's the problem?
Well, you know, when Stoke have to let Kenwyn Jones go for the CONCACAF, no, I won't bother pursuing
the Gold Cup. Yeah.
And just going back to the injuries thing before we kind of leave that behind. Of course, it's ironic. Here we are sort of saying about how you know players are being risked. Possibly, you know, clubs are not very happy about the fact that the players are going off and getting potentially injured in international friendlies. Of course, what we're seeing a lot nowadays is players mysteriously getting injured and falling ill before internationals. Now, quite how much of that is truthful, do you think? I mean, it's a bit suspicious now. I mean, I've just today on footballfairground.com, it was my duty to put together the TV preview. Which, if you haven't already read it, then you know after you've listened to this, get along to the site. There's no excuse. But we all, in writing those articles, always do a bit of research, which is kind of what makes it what it is.
Well, some of us do,
and well, some of us do. Yeah, some of us
go off on one.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, Graham. You know, with Terry still on the line there. We don't want him leaving just yet in disgust.
I didn't have the time to research it.
You were drunk. Go on, admit it. Go on.
I wasn't drunk. I was just having a ranty moment. And I thought, well, I'll just do a ranty moment because I really cannot be bothered to sort of like say, yeah, Valencia haven't won, they've lost three in the last five or whatever it is. And, you know.
If you can't stand the heat, Terry. Anyway, but while we're still all friends, if I can just rein this back in doing my research today, I discovered that I think Scotland, before their international this week against the Faroe Islands, have had 10 players withdraw from injury. Northern Ireland can say the same. I think the Republic of Ireland had about 6 or 7 players withdraw. Now, far be it for me to question the truthfulness of all these reports of players being ill, but is this becoming a bit suspicious now? Do we think is there a lot of this going on where players perhaps are being withdrawn for the greater good, and then because as you see a lot these days, suddenly they come back to their first club match after the international and oh he seems to be fit again. Well, that's a surprise. What's going on there?
Well, I think it wasn't the most famous incident, the Stephen Ireland one, wasn't it?
Yes.
When you said a member of his family had died. And
twice or something.
Twice.
Same one. Something like that, anyway. I think that this is there's a bit of a tradition for this. I imagine also that depending on the importance of the match, there's a degree of leeway from national managers who say, well, okay, fine, well, he can be, quote, injured for this one, but I need him for the next qualifying game. Mm. So I think that there's a degree of horse trading that goes on, which, in fairness, doesn't do anything it undermines somewhat the value of these friendlies even more so if you've got players who are actually kind of by gentleman's agreement sort of like ducking out. I suppose actually the most infamous one recently wasn't for a friendly at all, was it? It was for the Championship 2008, wasn't it? When John Terry was injured for the Croatia defeat but was back on the pitch for Chelsea the following Saturday.
Yeah.
Which I think many of us English types found somewhat galling.
Distasteful, yes.
Hmm. John Terry in distasteful shock.
Dear brave Sir John Terry, yes. But not all internationals are friendlies, of course, and some of them are meaningful games. Just to go off now in a slightly different direction, we've got Euro 2012 qualifiers going on at the moment, and as from the next finals that are going to be taking place in a couple of years' time, we are going to be seeing an expanded competition whereby there will be more internationals in the finals. Instead of having, was it four groups of four? There's going to be six groups of four. Now, we haven't really discussed this much. I'm sure we will discuss it more nearer the time, providing this podcast of ours is still going. I'm sure it will be. What's our views on that? Is in terms of sort of a change of format, is that a step too far? Because, I mean, certainly again, casting my mind back to the, what would that have been, 82 World Cup, when they've changed from 16 to 24 teams, suddenly you had this kind of strange number and you had to have all kinds of shenanigans going on in order to whittle it down from 24 to 16.
Yeah, you used to have like third, like the best four third place teams or something, whatever it was.
Yeah, the four out of the six best third place teams.
Or in Spain, you had two group stages, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. Yes, and that was a real thriller minute, wasn't it?
Yes, that was pretty much disastrous.
So that's a bad move, do we think?
I don't know.
I mean, we kind of in some ways want to see more teams, don't we? We want to see a bit of variety, but
we get to see more teams. For those of us who support nations that have historically, recently anyway, had trouble qualifying for that particular tournament, it isn't perhaps a bad thing. And I guess the cynical view, which I think is probably the correct view, is that it's like, well, we're fed up of these big nations like England not getting their shit together sufficiently to qualify for the existing tournament, so we better expand it so that they can get in and we can make pots of cash out of them. I'm sure that perhaps even the Scottish FA would have in fact I'm sure they would probably helped sponsor it, because I think they were running the show at the time. So it does dilute the integrity of the competition insofar as you can call a big tournament in the middle every 4 years to determine who is the best team in Europe lost my words. I'm not certain that there's much integrity anyway in the idea of the European Championship as a means of determining the best team in Europe. It's only a 4-week competition or a 3-week competition, and it's a bit of a contrived mechanism. The best way to do it would be to do it over a league format, but that's tedious and nobody really wants that. So I think it's also a good chance for the smaller nations to get in,
have a bit of fun. Spotlight.
Yeah, have their bit. I mean, in a way that, because I'm a bit undecided about this, about the Champions League, for instance. There's an awful lot of smaller teams in the Champions League, and there are times when I just think, oh, well, the group stage of the Champions League is just a preliminary round for the good stuff when it starts in the new year. But then the other time I think, well, that's unfair, because there are other federations and other leagues from different parts of Europe which you don't normally get the chance to see, that you will get the chance to see now because of the Champions League. And I think that is my overall views. I think it's both a good thing and probably a bad thing as well.
I think I think it's interesting because, I mean, it does highlight the huge size of the UEFA federation now. That it can have a tournament with 24 countries in, and knowing that more than half of the countries still won't be there. I suppose it does make qualifying a shorter route as well, or does it, or do it just mean that they
don't
won't,
know? Good
that,
question.
Does it just mean that there won't be the playoffs there? But
that could be it. Yeah.
You're allowing another 8 teams to come in, so I suppose that logic would say that there that qualification would be shorter, and so less games. So clubs might be a bit happier about that.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Because those playoffs are tremendous fun. Playoffs are great fun.
And they've thrown up some great ties. Yeah, and obviously, look at the World Cup with France and Ireland. It shows you what it can throw up.
So, I mean, we're interesting to see whether or not they actually managed to contrive a way of including playoffs, because they're so much fun.
Yeah.
And again, they make money. So, I decided to return to the whole bread thing, but that is what makes the world go round, after all, isn't it? So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Graham. Considering the number of nations in the European region, yeah, you're still talking about the minority. I mean, like, South America, they all go. But then, you know, there are 18 teams.
Well, I was going to say, actually, apparently for the 2014 World Cup, there is this issue about whether if the host nation comes from a particular continent, do you thereby take away one of the qualifying places? And I think they're sort of saying there that the South American CONMEBOL, the association in South America, will actually make sure that there is an extra qualification place to account for Brazil going through as of right as hosts, which means that you're going to have a situation where I think something like 8 out of the 10 South American countries will qualify, or will, I don't know, there's some kind of crazy kind of...
They get 4.5, if I remember rightly. Graham, perhaps you can back me up on that.
That's right, yeah, and then there's usually a playoff, isn't there?
Because there's a playoff. Well, last time it was with the... I don't remember who it was with, but I think it was one of the Asian confederations, I'm not sure.
This time around, yes, a situation where you basically just got to turn up from a South American country and you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I suppose the argument to that is, well, it's a South American tournament, so therefore it's reasonable.
Who am I to begrudge Venezuela their big moment? You're right. I mean, South American countries always welcome and always good to see, I suppose, in these finals. Before we close, a quick look at some of the internationals that are going on this week. Just sort of picking out a few. We mentioned before the Argentina versus Brazil match over there in Doha. England playing France, of course. Any thoughts on that? Are we bothered about it insofar as predicting a score, perhaps?
Well, where is the game again?
Is that Wembley?
Is it Wembley? Is it? Yeah. Okay. Wasn't this supposed to be the big game that was going to be David Beckham's send-off? I'm not quite sure.
Oh, that's right. Yes, what a memory you have. Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know whether it is. But, I mean, I thought up to this point, well, of course, up to a couple of days ago or yesterday, I think he was involved in the MLS action, so I'm not quite sure that he's in the picture at all. I'm afraid I know nothing about it. I mean, the only thing I do know is that Jay Bothroyd has been given a call, which is a peculiar decision on the surface, although not having seen Cardiff play or Jay Bothroyd play, I'm not going to be so arrogant as to assume that it was just simply a mistake by Capello. But no, I mean, it's not a game that I would imagine calling. I remember the last time they played in a friendly was in the early 90s, and it was when Jeff Thomas missed that absolute howler from when he was clear through
on goal. Hit the corner flag with a shot.
Yeah, I know. It was very, because he was a Palace player at the time, and we were all immensely proud that a Palace player was sort of like playing for England.
That's our boy on there.
That's our boy there making an absolute fool of himself. a lovely man, Jeff Thomas, and everyone should support his foundation for cancer research. Made a bit of a ricket there. But no, I don't have a particular view on that.
No, well, I mean, France sort of, you know, changing things around at the moment and looking pretty good for what it's worth. I happen to know, you know, from having watched them, so... could be at least a good first half, but I'm a bit curious as to the whole kind of Fabio Capello selection approach at the moment. It's like he's sort of picking all these players from even a few, you know, in the lower reaches of the Premier League and into the Championship, and good for him and all that. But I just wonder if he's just going a bit nuts now that he's in the final throes of his contract, whether he's just saying, what the hell, I'll just throw a dart in my newspaper and see which, you know, player's name I hit.
Well, England are nearly there, aren't they? His work is nearly done. So once England have qualified, then all he has to do is basically turn up for the finals. And then that's him. He can go and take his rather large sum of money with him. So, yeah, maybe there's an element of, or maybe he's relaxing, maybe. And maybe that's not a bad thing for England. Maybe indeed, in some perverse way, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah. A very quick mention, Sweden against Germany. I happen to know, again, from doing the aforementioned TV preview, Terry, that I think Germany are blooding a good few young players, particularly from Borussia Dortmund, who happen to be top of the league at the moment.
Think he's in there, and Kevin Grosskreutz, I think, is in there. And also André Schürrle from... Mainz, who've had a cracking start to the season, albeit they've somewhat got off the rails a bit in the last few weeks. Well, actually, more than a bit in the last couple of weeks. And Lewis Holtby, England's Lewis Holtby, if the English tabloids are to be believed, but actually German under 21 captain Lewis Holtby is also in there. So that is going to be of some interest to give us a bit of a snapshot of maybe what the Germans are going to look like in 2012, when they also will most assuredly make it to that tournament.
I'll say, and then some, yes. Right, I reckon that should probably do us for this week's show, actually. I think we've covered all the bases there. If you've got any comments or any feedback you want to give us, do get in touch. We'd like to hear what you think about international friendlies. Should there be more, fewer? You know, your views on the formats of things like Euro 2012 and the World Cup and such like. Always good to hear your opinions on stuff like that. So listen out for the end of the programme. You'll hear all our contact details and where you can get in touch with us and so on and so forth. A quick shout again, if you haven't already donated to Chris Knee's fundraising efforts for cardiac risk in the young, get along to justgiving.com/two-footed-tackle. That's not a two-footed tackle, just yeah, you know what I said. Please donate whatever you can, because Chris Knee is trying to raise £1,000 for that very worthy cause before Christmas, if possible, so every penny counts. Please do donate if you can. Failing that, we hope you'll join us again next week for another Sound of Football podcast. Thank you very much indeed for your company. For now, though, from myself, from Terry and from Graham, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
Goodbye. You can get in touch with the show via our website, footballfairground.com/soundoffootball, or via our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/soundoffootball, or through Twitter, which is twitter.com/soundoffootball. I am not Spartacus.